Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
But I really like her. She's kind of like, this is what's going on. So I get this, do this. When you start breastfeeding, put cabbage on your nipples. And I was like, great. She's like half old school, half just like, listen, I don't care what you do. She's coming out April 10th. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Y'all, I don't know why, but every time I go to record the intro outro, I like choke. Like, this is like the fourth or fifth recording. The last two times it was because of noise in the background. I live in New York City. I just got to roll with it. We record remotely. It's just going to fucking happen. I don't have a studio recording. Unforge. That's just not who I am right now. But then I went on a tangent that I was like, okay, this is very unnecessary. Let's cut it. But I don't know why. There's a lot of pressure. I'm just being real with you. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whenever you're listening to this episode. I hope you're having a great week, a great day. If not, don't worry, you know, shit happens. Sometimes we have bad days. And for bad days, I'm always like, just feel the feels and then sleep, and then you'll feel better the next day. And it's pretty foolproof. Someone's like, no, absolutely not, Ellie. Shut the fuck up. And you know what? Maybe you're right. This episode's really, again, really fun, really interesting. My guest today is Casey Bolsham, who's a hilarious comedian. And I actually met her through Fringe Festival. So we both had our show at the same venue, but in different spots, which doesn't make sense unless you've like been to Fringe. And months before, the venue was like doing these interviews, like Instagram interviews, and they paired us together, and that's how we met. And then like saw each other a few times at Fringe as well. And so we do talk about Fringe. We talk about Fringe, I think, a little bit more than I normally do on the podcast. And yeah, if you're interested in doing the Fringe, I think it's a good little combo. The Fringe is just a lot. Like you lose a shit ton of money. I'll put that out there immediately. You lose a buttload of money. Unless you're like selling out every day, you're just losing money. And I went into that knowing that. But I now, like 6-7 months removed, because at first you're like, what just happened? It's such a whirlwind. It's such a clusterfuck. It's such a roller coaster of emotions. You're so mentally, physically, emotionally exhausted that the first month or two afterwards, you're like, what just happened? And it was also mine and Aaron's first month of marriage. Like literally we got married, 3 days later we were in France, and then like 5 days later we were in Scotland for a month. And that was also a lot of lessons learned as well, like with the show and like with my relationship and like how to communicate. Long story short, communication key, y'all. Anywho, now being so removed from it, I'm like, holy shit, so worth it. So much was learned and like shaped me. And we go into that, me and Casey, and we also have very different experiences as well. And you'll see why very soon. And that's not all that we talk about in this episode. We also talk about Casey's pregnant. And actually the day that this episode comes out is her due date, though she's probably going to give birth before, but like, holy shit, like what if she comes out on her due date? And it's a big part of the episode. Obviously, we talk a lot about pregnancy and we talk a lot about infertility because Casey, it took her about 5 years to get pregnant through IVF. So we go very in-depth to IVF. We go very in-depth into infertility. And I think it's a very interesting conversation and very like knowledgeable. Like I learned so much, especially as like me and Aaron are going to start trying the next couple months, which is also wild. Like it's April. We're going to start trying in like July, August. Like it's right down the road, very surreal, and who knows, but it's also like you do something, not to ever compare the Fringe to like pregnancy or anything like that, but after you do something that's like so wild and such a roller coaster, it kind of just like calms you a little bit to be like, okay, this feels doable. I don't know. It's so weird. And we go more into that in the episode, but I think you're going to really like it. And I think it's just like a good, fun episode. And then, yeah, Casey's a fucking hilarious comedian. Obviously, she's going to take a couple months breaks. And if after that, you know, check her out in New York City if you're around. And please follow her. Please follow Casey Balsham on all the socials at Case, K-A-S-E, Face, Case Face B. So Case, K-A-S-E-F-A-C-E-B. I feel like I just like plowed through that. And when I get excited, I start talking way more passionately and way quicker. And I'll see y'all on the other side.
You are now 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks away from like the official due date.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I am 37 and a half weeks pregnant. So it's truly, it really is any day. And like I said, and it was almost yesterday. So
I know. I can't believe that.
Very close to baby. Yes.
I do have to ask though, what was it like being pregnant in a different country for a month during a travel break?
I don't know if me and you had talked about this, because like I've been very vocal about my dislike of Fringe,
mm-hmm.
Which is of course where I met you, or before when we did the podcast. I don't know if it was the because obviously I was doing a show about infertility, and then I find out 5 days into being there for a month that I am pregnant. And so that was just kind of a trip as well, to then have mm-hmm. to get on stage every night and kind of like relive this story, and sometimes relive it for only 6 people. It was just, there was a lot of emotions happening. I was very tired. I was starting to get very nauseous. There was a trash strike, so the entire town smelled, and there was just like so many people, and my venue kind of smelled fun. Like, I don't know if I didn't like it because I was pregnant, or if I didn't like it because it wasn't what I expected, you know, I expected going there to at least have audiences. And it just was like, without the app and without spending $10,000 on the great PR person, or without doing like 2 hours of flyering myself every day, that I just wasn't prepared to do, you know. So it was, I was very miserable for a lot of it. I'd have these moments where I was like, oh my God, Scotland is so beautiful. Like, I can't believe I'm miserable. But it was just, you know, it's so crowded. There's so many people. There was orange soda everywhere. Like, it was just like that fucking Iron Brew, which, by the way, I had heard from a Scottish guy the other day, that there's like a whole thing with that. Cause he's like, did you like it? And I was like, it tasted like bubblegum and medicine. Like, it was disgusting. And he's like, it's a whole thing. They just changed the recipe. It's a super secret thing. And they changed it and everybody's pissed. Like, so apparently we didn't get the real deal stuff, and everybody in Scotland is pissed. Okay. That is just a little backstory of Iron Brew. But I was, I had moments where I was very like happy to be there. And then I had a lot of moments where I was like, man, I am having this experience and I am making the show better, but I am not having a good time. I'm like, and I just wanted to be home. You know, I was like newly pregnant after 5 years. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen my husband. Like, it was just, it was a lot to be there early on in a pregnancy, not able to see my doctor, which I thought I'd actually freak out more about that. But the place where because I had to go find blood work, I had to go get my blood drawn twice in Scotland and try to figure out that. But the place I got my blood drawn was like in this like very cute, like scenic. So it was kind of like, I'd take this walk and be like, oh, okay, this is not so bad. But yeah, like not being able to see my doctor, not being able to like hear a heartbeat, just kind of like seeing a stick that said I was pregnant. And then the blood work came back good. But it was like, there was so many emotions.
I can't even imagine. Like, I...
So many.
it's already... Like, now we're like, what? We're like 8 months removed. Right after it, I was like, what the fuck was that? Like, what the fuck did I just do? Yeah. No, go on.
I was just saying, I came home and my husband was actually out of town when I came home. And I came home and I walked in my door and I just started sobbing. I was just like, I sat down in the shower and I was like so thankful to be home, but also just like processing what all of it was. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, literally, I couldn't even unpack my suitcase for like a week. I was like, I don't want to look at any of this shit. I had to throw away a bunch of like the things that I like, the perfume I bought, because I couldn't even smell. I was really sensitive to smells at the beginning of my pregnancy, and everything that reminded mm-hmm. me of Scotland would make me throw up. I was getting physically sick. It was bizarre. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. We were at the end, you're so homesick. Like, and I remember mm-hmm. we just got home, and it was just like, cause I was, so it was mine and Aaron's first month of marriage. And like,
that's right. You were coming right off of your honeymoon.
And like, we've been together like almost 8 years, like 8 years next month. Like we have traveled a lot, but we've never been like that yeah. far away from home for that long together. Yeah. And then also yeah. the pricing was so disgusting to find flats, that it was me, my husband, and then so Melissa and Carolina, and then for like 2.5 weeks in a one bedroom flat, because it was the only thing I could find that we could afford.
That's
and,
a lot.
Oh yeah. So I think we all had breakdowns on our own. And then I remember being like afterwards being like, do we need to like go into couples therapy? Like, I don't know mm-hmm. how to handle this, because like my show has to come first right now, but I can clearly see like you are, you know, homesick and upset. And obviously yeah. now like 8 months, you know, we have way more good memories than bad memories. And I think yeah. Melissa Rich said this, but it was like after that, whatever that was, everything feels doable now. It's like, oh, you're gonna do this? Yeah, because I just did that for a whole fucking month. Because
it also takes a lot to get like the prep to set all that, to mm-hmm. like find a place, find the venue, get all the promotion, like the prep to just do the festival. I will say I was proud of myself for just following through. Mm-hmm. It was a bucket list thing. I said I would love to do this, and I did it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't love it, but mm-hmm. I also feel like, it does. I am that person, because I really do talk myself out of some things, being like, I don't want to fucking do all this shit. But like, after doing all these things that you have to do for the festival, you're right. Like everything, you're kind of like, oh, I can do things now after mm-hmm. the ordeal and all the stuff that you need to do that and go away for a month and be, yeah, that's a good way to say it.
It was like, what, like if you didn't have a PR team, or not a PR team, like a production team, it was like 8 months, 9 months of prep.
It was like, a lot. And I started late too. I started in like maybe February.
Oh yeah.
For August. And that was late.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I had applied to all my places, I think by October,
yeah.
November.
Yeah. I started very late.
I had someone reach out to me, I want to say March, and she was like, hey, I'm interested like this March. And I was like, girl, like
you needed to last year.
Yeah. Yeah, like you were, I don't know what's left. But she also had like said our venue, like the venue that we went to, and I was like, don't, because their venue smell, and we were in different locations too, we were in different buildings, and they smelled mm-hmm. and then get really wet and sticky, and like, oh my God, it was just
yeah. And like mine was like literally in an alleyway, that my poster was facing 11 trash cans that I paid £300 for. I remember yelling at the guy being like, you could have been so much more transparent. Like, I can't believe I spent money on this. He's like, in our defense, we haven't done this in three years, and there was no trash cans 3 years ago. I was like, but it was always an alley, right?
It was always an alley
where nobody would see it. And you know, the other guy that like ran the venue like lost his mind or something. So then it was just one guy running like yes. 50 venues. And it's so funny because me and, you know, I was living with Anthony DeVito, and we had very different, like he had really great PR. He had a really great, he had all this stuff. So his shows were full every night, like amazing. Packed, but still a full audience there could still suck. Like he was still like, they don't understand. Like,
yeah,
it was like, we both had like similar experiences, but I was performing for 6 people and he was performing for 60. But mm-hmm. we both were kind of like, not worth it. Like it was such an interesting experience. And I think yeah. I think we caught it on a bad year though. I think mm-hmm. this first year back was kind of like a shit show. Also, I don't know if you felt this, but it was like the minute I got there before the shows even started, I like looked around and kind of saw, and I was like, oh, I'm already behind. Do you know, like I was like, like when you see all the, you're like, oh, all these people have either done it a ton, they're established in the UK, they clearly have a huge production team and produce, like it just, I was like feeling just having this like little show. It just felt like I was like, oh, this is, I'm I'm already so far behind all these other shows that it just, it was, I kind of knew on day one that I wasn't going to be what I thought.
I remember, what happened? That, what you just said reminded me of something. Oh my God, why did I just lose it?
Like seeing all the posters. Yeah.
No, it was, you have to be UK, like the UK needs to know who you are. If you, they know who you are being, you're fine. If you don't know, they don't know who you are, you have to be out there. Cause I remember someone was like, yeah, you just go and fly her an hour before. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. Like we were out there. I would go out for like in the afternoon from like 1 to 3 or like 2 to 4, then get food and then do it another 2 or 4 hours. And it does, what sucks is it did work, but you are so physically exhausted and no one ever told you that. I feel like they're like, yeah, you're gonna be mentally exhausted, you're gonna be emotionally exhausted, but no one told me like how many hills there were or like how much walking you were doing. I know,
there's so much. There's and where we stayed was at the bottom of kind of like this hill. So every time I would, so when I was like exhausted at the beginning of my pregnancy, feeling sick, I would just be lying in bed thinking, oh, I gotta walk up the hill. And it was just so like, and at first I like put on my book and like at the beginning I was kind of like, okay. And then towards the end, I was like, I don't want to walk up that fucking hill right now. Like I cannot. Mm-hmm. I was so over it. But you know, I think having some space, I can kind of think about some of the better parts of it, but it was definitely, and again, like doing this emotional show about trying to get pregnant while like feeling emotionally, like just so many things because I was pregnant and still having this fear of like, you know, you just, when you go through it for so long in fertility, like even when you do get the positive, like even though I had never had a positive before, you still have this like fear ripping through you that like, even now 2.5 weeks, I still have this like a fear that something is going to happen. So that was also like, just, I think I was trying to push that to the back of my mind. I was trying to be like as excited as I can. Cause I'm like, hey man, I've never even been this pregnant. I've never even been positive pregnancy test pregnant, like never. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to be like, let me just be in it and present. But like, there was so much happening. And then hills and then it stunk.
Like I truly cannot.
It smelled like trash.
And like we really were screwed. There was a trash strike the whole time. Like I'm pretty sure.
The rail strike. It stinks and it can't go anywhere.
And I remember I was reading all afterwards and it was like, it was 25% less people coming than normal. But rail strikes.
Even at the restaurants, all the prices were raised everywhere in Scotland for that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, just a major loss. Like I remember someone was like, oh, we're gonna make money, right? And I was like, no, like I've already put so much money into this already. Like there's no way I'm hitting even just like breaking even. No. But like the hardest part too was like, which I just can't imagine being pregnant and dealing with this, but you were also watching so many artists live out their worst days. Like I remember I was flying where like Gilded Balloon and like Assembly was because there was always a lot of people there. And I see this girl dressed up as an alien crying. And I'm like, she's trying to fly her. And it gets worse. It gets worse. So I was like, what the fuck is going on? So I go up and I'm like, I don't know her. And I was like, hey, are you okay? And then I realized these two fucking little cunts of boys, like maybe 12 years old, are literally harassing her and like won't leave her alone. And so finally I start harassing the boys. So my poster has me holding a dildo and I was like, oh, you want to be dicks? Okay. Go see my show about sex. Like come see this show about sex. Like I'm literally screaming sex at like 12-year-old boys.
Good.
And
yeah.
They're like making this poor girl cry. And I was just like, what can I do? And she was like, nothing. I can't do this anymore. And I was like, I literally just like was like kind of circling around her to make sure they didn't like come back. And I was like, what is this place? I had
it's so funny. You look around and you're like, what have we all put ourselves through? Cause it's also so many of these shows are so about trauma that it's like, you just walk around and people are being like, I was molested. My dad died. I have ADD. I can't have a baby. I have cancer. And you're just like, I am emotionally exhausted.
Oh, it was so weird. One time it was like a rough day and I'm flying and there's a group. I'd always say something like, oh my God, you guys seem really cool. Like, I think you'd like my show. Not really like caring. Like what, like I just said that to everyone and it honestly worked. And so I did this to a group and this guy, it was like 4 girls and this dude. And he was like, what the fuck? Like, stop messing with us. And he took my flyer and like wrote on it and like defaced it. And I literally was just like, What are you, why, what did you just fucking do? And
what's
he was like, he was like, I just can't do this. Like, I'm so sick of people coming up to me. And I was like, do you understand where you are at? Like, you are at the literal Fringe Festival to go see shows and people are trying to get you like in your shows. And he had Sam Morrison's poster or flyer. And I was just like, well, look, if you're not coming to my show, you should go to that show because it's good. And then I was like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I don't want him at that show. Like, yeah, he's not going to get it.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I've like broke down. I was like, what the fuck am I doing? It's a weird boot camp.
It really is. You have
to have
thick skin. I at the time, I don't think I did because there was like, it wasn't until the end of the run where like, you know, you're handing out your flyers and then you walk like a block and you just see your face on the ground everywhere. Like of people that just look, people that just looked at your story and went, not for fucking me. I actually like, because it is a hard sell for people to walk by to be like, hey, I can't have a baby. Want to hear a show about it? People are like, ooh. And I'm like, no, I promise you there's jokes. But like literally sometimes people would be like, that sounds like, one woman goes, oh, that sounds so boring. And I was just like, you said it like, to my face. So I'd say at the beginning I was just a little, but then I was just so physically exhausted by the end.
Yeah.
I didn't. I was like, I could give a fuck. Like, I'm just gonna go out the rest of this run. Like, I'm not even. I think I stopped trying. And then my last show, and I left a day early. My last show was like full, and I was like, oh, this might have been a different experience had I had this the whole time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, and you know, I kind of left being like, it's not that bad. And then immediately when I got home, I was like, it was that bad. Like I said, just sobbed and then threw away half the shit that I brought with me because I couldn't even stand to look at it or smell it.
I left like every poster because they were like, buy 10,000 posters. I used maybe 2,000. I was so mad.
I yelled at him too. He goes, at least. I go, that is so not. I had 50 pounds. I had pounds. I had so many flyers left over that it was disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, and he goes, well, okay, thanks for actually the feedback there. Cause I was just like, this is bullshit about what you tell people. This is bullshit. And he's like, okay, well, we're trying to. I was like, you don't need this many.
Yeah.
Like he was still calling me towards the end of being like, you still have a box of flyers here. I was like, burn it.
Like, I'm not coming for it.
I don't fucking want it. I'm pregnant. I can't carry a 50 pound box of flyers.
They're so heavy. Like oh my God, they were so freaking heavy. We had to get them up three flights of stairs to our freaking flat. And I was like,
ours too.
Please let me go through them. And that didn't happen. I just threw them right there with the bins, like at the end being like, I don't give a shit. Like I just go away. Cause they were like, we'll recycle them for you. And I was like, I cannot physically get these to you. You have one spot. No, sorry. I cannot recycle these. Oh my God. Yeah. No, the first 2 months. And what's also really hard is like, everyone wants to ask you about it. Like for the first 2 months you're back and you're like, I cannot talk about it like anymore. Like it's got to go away for a second. But then we hit like, for me, it was like 6 months like separated that I was like, oh shit. Like I feel stronger. I'm not afraid of small crowds anymore. I'm not afraid of like dicky people anymore. I was like, I guess it was worth it. And it was cool. Like I got to really see like refall in love with my show that I hadn't felt in a long time. But it is like,
that's
even
great.
A full crowd, you don't know what you're gonna get. Like we had like two, I think I told you this, we had two young girls and it was like a good size, we were like half full, it was a good size crowd. They were from University of Edinburgh. It was like student newspaper gave me a half star because it was not wholesome enough. Yeah.
With a show with the word sex in the title.
Yeah. And my press release, it explicitly says what's going to happen.
And you're holding a dildo.
I'm holding a dildo. And that audience, though, it was a good sized audience. Everyone was super weird. No one was into it. And I was like, what did you think you were getting into? The show about sex. Like, and then like, I remember seeing that review and I was like, oh, do I even show my other performers? Like, I don't want to fuck with their heads. Like, but then I ended up showing them being like, look, this is really dumb. And honestly, it's kind of really funny. And now we can use that. But it was like, it does like fuck with you.
But it also like, once you get a step away, like when you're there, those reviews, you feel like they mean everything. And then once you get like a step away, you're like, oh, that means fucking nothing. Who are
nothing.
These losers? Who are these losers? Like, I got a really bad Chortle review. And Chortle is like their little comedy, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, you got to get a review, which I paid for. I like bought an advertising thing. So I paid for this guy to see it. He saw literally, I think my third day of preview, the worst day, like I was fucking with the lighting. There was five people there. One of them was a comic. Two of them didn't speak English and him. Like, and one, it was just like, it was like, I would have given myself a star. He gave me 2 stars, but like, I just, you know, you go and you kind of go, oh, that sucks. But then you separate and you're like, who the fuck is Steve from? Like, nobody, this guy means nothing to me. Like, he means absolutely nothing to, like, it doesn't matter. But like, when it's happening and all the posters are getting all these reviews put up, you know, because, you know, when you're there, as the reviews come in, all people's posters start getting the stars put up. You just start to feel like some kind of way. And then you just kind of realize you're like, this fucking like, none of this matters. And so, yeah, it was definitely like, it kind of becomes more funny to be to like, especially because sometimes, yeah, the reviews get to be a little like, well, she was, like, I think one of his criticisms was that I made jokes about something, and I'm like, yeah, it's a comedy show.
Yeah.
like he thought that the joke was a little too like, he and I was just like, what are you saying? And then, so he said the jokes, I was making jokes about things, but then also it felt more like I was teaching something. So I was like, which one would you like? Mm-hmm. What am I supposed to do here? Because I remember that show specifically because they were so not laughing because there was one critic, one comic, and two people that didn't speak English. I did just kind of be like, okay, well, I am going to just go into teach mode and tell you exactly about the process. Mm-hmm. So he didn't like that. And he also didn't like that I was making jokes about it. So I was like, what would you have liked the show to be, sir? Mm-hmm. Like, how would you like a show of infertility to be presented? Please tell me.
It's like, it's not, if you want it a certain way, man, do your own show about infertility. But like, this is my story. It's so weird. And that's what's hard too. It's like you said, like, these are of some very like traumatic experiences for a lot of people that they're reliving daily. And then to have someone
for a month.
Yeah. Debase it just because it doesn't look exactly how they expected it to look. Like, you can't do that. If you're going to be a reviewer, you have to be open-minded. But what's so weird about the reviews, you can be anyone and just get a reviewer like pass or like whatever you want to call it. Yes. And that's what's also like really scary is you don't know who you're getting too. And you're like, oh, okay. But
yeah,
I mean, speaking of in vitro though, like I honestly actually don't know much about it. I only know literally from Sex and the City when Charlotte has a really hard time and can't get pregnant with it. Like that's all. I was just thinking about that the other day because I'm rewatching Sex and City right now. And I was like, shit, I know nothing.
Well, we don't. The thing is that we're not taught anything about our fertility. And they're trying to take even more of that away. And it's like, what do you learn in school? We learn that we have a period and we learn like, hey, this is a pad. And you learn about like a condom and a wet dream. Like nobody, like there is no follow-up when you're older to be like, hey, by the way, this is the situation with your eggs. This is actually the times, like if you are trying not to get pregnant or trying to get pregnant, this is what you need to look out for in your body. You should also get things checked out because so many times you don't know if there's anything going up there until somebody is literally trying to find something wrong because you've been trying to get pregnant for 2 months and you can't. And they're like, oh, well, you're fucking riddled with fibroids or like, you know, you have a septum or something. Like there's all these things inside of our bodies that we're not told to pay attention to. We're not told. And you have to ask for them because nobody's going to do these tests for you. Mm-hmm. Nobody is going to look at a 26-year-old woman and be like, have you ever thought about, do you know if you want kids? Should you think about freezing yours? Nobody's looked at a 35-year-old woman and been like, do you want kids? Because if you do, you have to start thinking about some stuff now because after 35, your eggs do kind of, there is a bit of a drop off for most women, you know, in quality and in numbers. So it's like nobody says that. You have to go in and say, can you test some of my levels? Can you look at things? When like we really should know about this stuff. I mean, it's like sometimes you think about it's like half these arguments going on and it's like, well, fuck, if we knew anything about how our cycles actually worked, like maybe there wouldn't be as much abortion as you think happens, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's like, a really good point.
If a woman knew when she was fucking, I mean, not trying to take away from people that are, get pregnant against their will and all these things. And, you know, but it's like, and obviously the times when it's medically necessary, because that's another thing too. It's like, there's so much inequality of your eggs that cause an embryo to not be viable, which causes miscarriage, which causes these, you know, these situations where you need to abort it because the baby won't live past the womb. It won't live in the womb. And then it doesn't evacuate itself. Like there's so many things that we are just forced we're forced to deal with as they come. So it's like we are forced to be reactive instead of proactive and actually learn anything about our bodies. They just don't fucking tell. They just don't. They don't. They let us just go into things blindly, uneducated, and it's just, it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's pretty infuriating. And then you get to be a certain age where like, I want to have kids, and you think that you've been preventing this your whole life of like, you know, and then you made the decision to have them, and then you get there and like everything's wrong. And you're like, oh man, I didn't foresee this happening.
Yeah.
Like, I thought the first time my husband shot a load in me, I was like, we're ready, we're doing it. And for some people that's what happens. Like I literally went to bed thinking I'm a mom. And 5 years later is when I, you know, it's just, it's crazy, but in vitro is a situation where they take the eggs and they take the sperm independently from each partner. And they basically just put, there's two ways. They either take like a bunch of sperm and kind of put it by the egg and let it, or they just take one sperm and they put it in the egg.
Oh, wow.
So it's called ICSI. So we did that to where like they find a good sperm, they put it in the egg, and then they just kind of watch them to see first, the eggs also have to be mature. So it's like, you can take the eggs out and you'll probably lose a couple for mature. Like they have to be right at the right, like ripeness, I guess, you know, you could say. And then they have to put the sperm in, and then that has to actually impregnate. And then it has to last, you know, that first night. And then it has to last to day three, like kind of growing some more cells and kind of doubling. And then it has to last to day five or six. And once you have these day five or six, they call them like blastocysts. Then you send them to genetic testing to make sure that all the chromosomes, so that you're not just implanting, again, something with a chromosomal abnormality that is just going to miscarry. So they want, that's a whole debate too. Cause then people are like, you're just discarding all these embryos. It's like, hey buddy, they weren't going to like it would have died inside of me or it would have died outside of me. Like it wasn't, this was never a baby that was going to live. Mm-hmm. It's also not something you can see with your eyes. So it's like, why are we giving it these rights? It's just, it's fucking insane to me, but that's a whole different debate, obviously. But then you go to genetic testing and you get the ones back that are, that have the right amount of chromosomes, that have the best chance of implanting and surviving. But every step of the way, it goes down by like 50%. So you can start with a certain number, and by the time you get to the end, sometimes it's a very low number. So it's just like it's just a wild process.
Yeah.
Wild. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, I'm already stressed hearing about it, and like, I didn't live it, you know?
Yeah. And but then like, you just are on all these drugs, and then they take it. And then when they implant an embryo, and then you're like, you have to wait 2 weeks to find out if you're pregnant, and you're just like going nuts. And that's why, like, I literally had an embryo, I implanted it, and I was like, I'll just leave the country. And it feels like that's a good way to distract myself. Cause I honestly didn't anticipate being pregnant. Like I really kind of was so like not expecting anything because I've been just doing it for so long that I was like, I even tested early because I was like, it was like a really nice day at the beginning of the month. And I was like, I just want a beer. And then I was like, like freaked out, but like, it's crazy. It's a crazy process. And it's just, it makes you feel like a crazy person because you're just like, am I, aren't I? And it's like the time just goes so slowly when you're waiting to find out, but it's a wild process what they can do with science, but you know, and it's nice that this is an option for people who want badly to be parents, and just this, their science, their bodies, it's just not, there's no chance, you know?
And you really like, you hit it out the park. I don't know what that saying is. The, when you said like, you think you're preventing it your whole life because you don't want it just yet, but you don't know. Like I was telling Aaron, I was like, my biggest fear is like, that it's not going to work, that something's, I don't want to say wrong with my body, but that it's not going to do the thing that's supposed to do. And you wonder, you're like, is it something that I did? Like I've been on birth control forever now. I've been on IUD for like, I think I'll get it taken out probably like June or July. So it'll be about 7 years. And it's like, well, what did that do? What did that fuck up? Because I know nothing about my cycle. I have not seen an actual period in 5 years. Like I'll spot.
Right.
But I have not had like, I needed to use a tampon. I needed to use like a pad, like, and it comes like, honestly, sporadically, like I never know what's going on.
No, I know, like you said, like there are certain times when you definitely won't get pregnant, and this is like the better time when you will. Like
there's only like 3 days during the month. There's only like a 3 to 5 day window when you can actually get pregnant, and it also varies. And also, like another thing that is something that they don't say is that it's really 50-50. Like, don't assume it's something wrong with you, like, because 50% there's. And it's so much easier for a man to get his sperm tested than it is for us to go through all this stuff. But like, infertility is 50-50. And it's just that the women have to go through the process because we're the ones that have to go, like, because we're the vessel, essentially. It's just, it's so much that even if it's just the sperm, you still would have to get your, like, this, if the sperm is never going to make it to the eggs, you still have to go through a process, even if nothing is happening with you, you know, like, so it's still a very intensive, very invasive process for women, even if it's a man. And I always suggest people, and it's so funny, cause I like, you know, I suggested to a friend of mine to just, she's like, well, we think maybe like in a year. And I was like, you know what? You never know. Just start trying. And of course they got pregnant the first time that they did it. Or like right when she took out her, we stopped birth control or something like that. So I don't know much about it because I literally haven't been on birth control since I'm 21. I was like on antidepressants, ADD medicine and birth control. And I was like, I have no control over my emotions. So I just cut everything.
Yeah, I take one of them out.
I cut it all off. I was like, I need to cold turkey all the shit. And I was in college. I think there's a lot of people that get pregnant pretty soon after taking it out. And I know it takes a while too, but these are all questions to like start talking about with like your gynecologist and all that stuff. And also I always suggest to people, I'm like, like I said, for men, it's so easy to get their sperm tested. Like they just go in, they jack off in a room and a guy looks at it under a microscope. Like it's so much less invasive to just kind of like know. And next time also just get a blood test done and check some of your levels and have them just kind of look and see what your eggs are doing up there, you know, like you know what's going on. Like I know it's scary. Like I know for some people it is scary because you don't want the wand to get up there and them to be like, oh, you have low ovarian reserve already, which is like when you don't have a ton of eggs. And sometimes that can happen for people like before the age markers that it's like supposed to happen. So I always just tell people, just for your own fucking sanity, and like if you even think you want kids, just to get some, just ask for some tests, just ask for some poking around, just so that, just for your own peace, just so you know, like if it's something that you think of, like even if you don't want it for a year, just know, just to see if, and just to know if like, hey man, in a year we should be okay to like just try. Or if like somebody's like, I actually need to maybe put you on some kind of hormone supplement today for a year. You know, like you just never know. But I just think it's better to kind of be informed because we're so, like you said, it's like we're so in the dark and they're just barely starting to talk about infertility like in the mainstream right now.
Well, it's really interesting you say that too. Like I've been pretty open with my gyno. I do use a walk-in gyno, which I love. They've been amazing. And they're also an 8-minute walk from my place. So I'm like, yeah, perfect. I'm always going here. And I've been talking to them about it because so I have HPV 18. So I have to go every 6 months just to, because I always pop positive on my pap smears and they just want to like confirm. So I was like talking to them probably like a month or two ago. And I was like, because I had to do a cold pop again. And I was just like, hey, like, do you know, quick question. What happens if this goes positive and, you know, it's cancer and like, what do I do like in the timeline of like wanting to have a baby? And she was like, actually, this is going to be two different stories. She was like, actually, just so people know, like, so if you test positive on your pap smear, the next thing is a Colpop. Test positive on the Colpop, the next thing is called a LEAP. And it's still not that it's cancer. It's just that there's abnormal cells. And the LEAP was like, we just go in and scrape them out. And she literally was like, look, worst case, she was like, if, you know, if we scrape out and then those come positive, then you might need to take like a
scrape is like it's like when, like thinking about things being scraped out of your ear is like, so I hate the word scrape, but they use it for so many things.
Yes. It's so bad.
She you was have like, to get shit scraped when you're going through this process too, because they have to like test certain things, and you're just like, please don't say scrape. Please say like remove or something else, but stop saying fucking scrape when you're talking about my insides. Thank you so much.
Especially when like you're in the stirrups, like my gyno, she likes to give me play by play. She's like, okay, I'm spraying this to do this. I'm scraping here on like 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock. And I was like,
yeah,
you're in me. Now I feel it. Like now I feel the scraping. Like, please stop.
Yeah.
But she was like, yeah. So she was like, if it's cancer, she's like, we kind of can see it. Like, it's pretty, like, this is like, we're just checking.
Interesting.
It's like, mm-hmm. She's like, this is like, we're just stopping that from growing into cancer. And then she was like, look, if you, you know, tested positive on this Colpop and then you disappear on us and you like need a leap, but you get pregnant and you go have your baby and say you give birth vaginally. She was like, when your baby comes out, the head is going to scrape off all the abnormal cells. So you'll be fine. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? What? And she's like, yeah, your baby's like head is just gonna take it all down with it. And I was like,
that's so wild.
This is so crazy. But then so
that's
I was like,
so wild.
And she was like, you're gonna probably be fine, like, don't worry, blah blah blah. And and it was like my Colpop came negative again, and I have to do one more before like we start really really trying. Mm-hmm. And but I was like, hey, so like, what should I be doing right now? Like, this is something, you know, we're a few months out, like, what should I be doing? And she was like, honestly, just take out your birth control around like June or July, like take out your IUD. And I was like, yeah. Nothing else? And she was like, no. And I was like, nothing else? There's nothing else that I need to be doing right now, like no tests, nothing? She was like, no. So finally I was like, can you just like go, since we're like down here, can you just like mm-hmm. check fully under the hood and go check out my ovaries? And she was like, sure, why not? So they go in, they do a vaginal like they do the wand, and then they do like the ultrasound one on my stomach, and they were just like, mm-hmm. vaginal looked fine, but she was like, we could not see your ovaries with this like the ultrasound because you have too much gas. Like we just can't see it. And she was like, do you know that you're gassy? And I was like, yeah, I have IBS. And she was like, well, you really need to get that like under control.
Wait, like, what? She said they couldn't see your ovaries because of gas.
Mm-hmm. There was holy gas like on top shit. Of my ovaries.
That's hilarious. I mean, like I've never heard of that. And that is fantastic.
Me neither. I mean, she was like worried. So what happened, so the, you know, the person does like the ultrasound, technician does the ultrasound, and as she was leaving, she was like, I hope you feel better. And I was like, oh my god. What, like, did she see?
Yeah
because they never say anything. They're always like, the doctor will go over the results with you. That was the first time I've ever done any type of like, because I've had to do like I had a breast cancer scare, so I've had like a lot of like sonograms recently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They never say shit. So when she was like, no, I hope you feel better, I was like, fucking A.
What is happening?
And then when the doctor came in, she was like, you have a lot of gas, like you have a lot. And I was like, what does that mean? And then she was like, I was like, yeah, what should I do? Like, I have a gastro, like we're working on it. And she was like, I don't know, probiotics. And I was like, oh my god, like you cannot come in here and say that. And
just to say, it's like so infuriating though. Mm-hmm. That like, you know, that she's like, sure. It's like why do we have to, this is why it makes me so crazy. And this is also why people need to like ask for these things and just be like, I don't care, like, because they make you try for 6 months before all this stuff. And it's like, well, just try first. And it's like, how about you just fucking do your job and look at my shit?
Yeah.
Like, how about I'm asking you for something and you just do it because my insurance is paying, or I'm paying you out of pocket to do it. But like, that's kind of like I'm all for like a doctor who doesn't cause panic, but like truly and honestly, someone to just kind of be like, I mean, whatever, like, don't do it. It's like, help me out, because if you don't help me out, I'm going to go on the internet and the internet is going to scare the shit out of me. And the internet's going to tell mm-hmm. me 85 different things. It's literally, the internet will say, just do this. And then the other side will be like, don't ever do that. And it's like, please just be a doctor and hear me saying like, I'm going to try to get pregnant soon. Like, just any words of like, just help me with something.
Yes.
Because there are like, you know, And maybe it's because sometimes I think doctors want things to be like scientifically tested and all this shit. And it's like, mm-hmm. hey man, but you also know that if like I did take this vitamin right now, it might help. Or if I started on a prenatal, or if I started, you know, like tell, just say something to me to like, you know, don't just be like, just take it out and start trying. It's like, just let me mm-hmm. know if I have eggs. Let me know if there's do I have a blo-, like, do you see a septum up there? Do you see it, is there just one uterus? Make sure that there's just one, you know, like all this stuff. Like, some people have two.
There can be just more than one. Oh my God.
There are some people have, some people have two uterus. So it's like, just look, just because if you have a fibroid or polyps or anything, especially I think with HPV, well, first, I actually just heard somewhere that they were like, most women have polyps or have at least some kind of polyp or fibroid that, like, and a lot of times they could be like on a part where it wouldn't affect getting pregnant, but sometimes they are like I had a fibroid that was like inside. So if I were to get pregnant where the baby would grow, it would like kind of poke right into that. So,
oh,
and this, yeah. And then I also had a septum, which means that your uterus at the top is kind of like, has like some kind of like a, like stuff, and it kind of makes it so that the uterus is like split at the top and you want it to be together. And so like it was like kind of like, I forget what it is. Cause it, so much of this stuff I've also like, there's so much that happens that some of it you kind of forget, but my doctor ended up taking it out and there was more than he thought. And whatever it was like, the stuff that would make it a hostile environment for transfer. Cause like you can have this like bacteria, like endometritis or like these things that would essentially not attack, but like reject, reject an embryo. Like, cause it's like a weird bacteria or something like that. So it's like, he took that out, but like my other doctor, I'd done a whole transfer and I'd done two egg retrievals. He didn't even see it. Like, he didn't even see the septum. And it's one of those things where it's a very low chance, but it can cause miscarriage and all this stuff. But also whatever was the material was like something that does not like embryos, you know? So it's like, there's so much little shit. There's so much little shit that it's like, man, just give me a full tune up. Check my shit out, you know? Cause it's just, like I said, it's just being empowered and knowing, because they just don't tell us anything about our bodies.
Yeah. And like, so
they tell us nothing.
I hate that I have to go every 6 months to check because something could be wrong, but I also kind of like it because like I can be like, here's all my questions. Like, I think it's crazy that Definitely. They say pap smears are like every 2-3 years for women. It's like, no, this should be like at least at minimum every year we go. Like, yeah. I find it so weird. They're very, very flippant about like our vaginal or our like our health down there. Cause yeah, like I don't even know. Like, I wouldn't even know to be like, hey, can you check my eggs real quick? Like, I wouldn't even have thought of like, hey, can you do a quick blood test?
I don't. And sometimes it has to be at certain times of your cycle when they can see, like, but just like, just being like, I'd like to just get my like ovarian reserve checked out. Like, just let me, like, I want to just see if there's things in there. Because like, I know a lot of people who are young and they go and their doctors are like, you have an egg, you've got one, like, we got to start figuring shit out. Yeah. So it's like, you just got to go like, see, just be like, when is the best time during my cycle to check out like my ovarian reserve or to check my AMH levels and my hormone levels and stuff like that, which they say, some people say like the hormone levels they're not like the end all be all, but I do think that there's part of it that like you want to check and make sure your hormones are kind of functioning at the basic level that would support pregnancy, you know? But again, it's just, and none of it, and it all sounds like intense, but like, it's really easy shit for just peace of mind for women. Take a vial of my blood and just check it out. Stick a wand in me before I ovulate and just check it out. Like, just let me know what's going on so that, you know, if there is something, we can start to do this before you're like me and you're $90,000 into a fucking process because you had no idea, you know?
Yeah. It's really weird. And I know like so many people talk about this too, but like it is just the way women are treated in the healthcare profession or healthcare.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even with the breast cancer scare, I did like a normal, just like a check on myself. I was like, that's a lump. That's a big lump. I've never felt that before.
Yeah.
Go to my general provider. She's like, it's nothing. And I was like, I'm sorry. I did what all the things tell me to do. And now it's your job to get me like a
a referral. But she was like, she didn't want to do it at first. And then she felt it. She was like, well, where is it? Like, she hadn't even felt me yet. And she was like, oh, okay, I see it. And she was like, well, you're young. It's probably nothing. And I was like, give me a referral. Like, I become such a bitch in doctor's offices. I've yelled at people before. And I was like, give me the test that I want. And so finally I get the referral. I call the people and they were like, oh, you're super young. Like, it's probably nothing. And I was like, cool.
It's infuriating.
I don't care. Like, give me the test.
That's how people die.
Because this is how people die.
They believe doctors and nothing. Like, you read all these things where women have had to go in 3 or 4 times to be diagnosed with things that would have killed them.
Mm-hmm. Well, what the major shift was, so we go, or I go, I get a mammogram and I get a sonogram. Like, those are both already scheduled. Like, I don't have to, because usually for people that don't know, usually you just go in for a mammogram. If they see something on the mammogram, then you get the sonogram. But I already have both scheduled. So they're in there. They're looking at the lump. They're like, there's nothing there. Cool. I was like, great. Doctor comes in. She was like, again, lump is nothing, but we found stuff. And I was like, what does that mean? And she was like, all I can tell you is it's not a cyst. And I was like, what? And she was like, it could be cancer. It could be something else. So it was like, okay, so now I have to get biopsies on both of my boobs. And so that appointment's way different. Everyone keeps saying best of luck. Like, no one says anything except best of luck. They kept saying best of luck on your journey. And I was like, oh, because they don't know what's about to happen.
Right.
And now they know that it could be something. And I was just like, the whole process was disgusting. Like, the whole process. And I don't blame anyone. I feel like, you know, there's probably a lot of false alarms, but I was like, the amount of stress you're in, and if you ever go to like a breast center, everyone there is so stressed and so exhausted. And you can tell so many people are there for bad news, have already gotten bad news. Like, people are there to get prep for surgery. And it's like, you can't treat people like that. Like, this is your life, you know?
Yeah.
But I just, it's the same things happening.
It's really tough. I was just talking to a friend about this, who's staying with us right now, because he was saying, his wife, like, her water was literally breaking, and they were like, I think you're okay. And she's like, this can't be pee. I'm also a week over my pregnancy date. Like, you have to, they were going to like send her home because like, it wasn't registering as like amniotic fluid or whatever. And she was like, this cannot be pee. And like, I'm clearly 9.5 months fucking pregnant. And it's just like, it's very crazy. I think sometimes they forget, just because they go through these motions so often, that like, I know that you're a doctor, but like, you're the first doctor I've talked to today, even if, you know, so like, maybe just treat me like somebody that's got some shit going on or something, you know?
Yes.
Like, it's just, it's so hard, because we're like trusting them because we don't know, but then sometimes they act like we're idiots. But also it's like, hey man, I've lived in this body for 41 years. Like, I can kind of tell when something's a little off. You know, so, but it's such a tricky thing to advocate. I'm really glad that you're yelling at people, because especially in New York, literally I had a giant lump. I had a lump on my neck that there was like a tiny carcinoma in it. But it was like, and I had it biopsied a bunch and all this stuff. And it always came back negative. And literally a nurse was like, some people are just lumpy. And I'm like, that's not what you said. I don't want to. Thanks. Thanks so much. I can't breathe. It's on my trachea. I can't breathe. I have this giant lump on my neck. And she was like, yeah, so we'll just lump it. And you're like, okay, cool. Like, especially in New York, I feel like they're so my sister is a nurse. And so she was working on Long Island for a bit, and she was living here. She's in San Diego now. And she was like horrified when she got here, because she's like, they break so many HIPAA laws. She's like, the first day I was in there, she was in an ER nurse on Long Island. She goes, there's just a nurse screaming, like, anyone has seen a Chinese guy on a stretcher? I'm looking for a Chinese guy on a stretcher. She's like, you can't just scream that. Or like, the nurses will be like at the nurse station, like gossiping, like in front of me, like talking, but she's just like, it's just so different here. Like, she's like, the healthcare system in New York is just different.
Like, oh my God.
Just wild. Like, the way that they just kind of are like, hey, this is how it is, whatever.
It kind of makes me feel better, wild, because you do have crazy experiences. Yes. And, oh my God, I have a lump on my neck too. And finally I'm getting it. I finally got a referral for it. And they're like, yeah, she like felt it. And she was like, it's probably benign. And I was like, really cool. I understand that. But probably is not like the answer I want.
Yeah.
But
I have tested. Yeah. There's like so many. And I was even just talking to the nurse yesterday. She's like, I don't know what it is, but she's like, I recently, so many women have thyroid cancer. Like, and it's an easy one, luckily, for the most part. But like, I don't know what it, I don't know if it's like our phones. I have a theory that I think when we were young, they didn't cover us up at the dentist when they did x-rays. But like, there's something happening with thyroids right now. So definitely,
oh, shit.
You got a lump in your neck. Yeah. But again, like it's there, it seems to be a pretty easy, luckily, like an easy-ish one to remove.
Okay. Yeah, that's
what. But like, definitely don't let her be like, it's fine. Because my lump grew to be like, it was like cutting my trachea. I was like, when I lay down, I was like, I can't breathe. I think it's time to take this thing out. So like, yeah, like a scar. And yeah,
oh
it's
my
just
God.
Like, but you just, so there's something going on with necks. That's Get your crazy. Neck checked. Get your neck checked.
Yeah, she thinks it's a lymph node. And I think, and she was like, it'll probably go down. Yeah.
And but it, sometimes like, the swollen lymph nodes could be something else too.
Yeah. So it's like, and it's been there for a long time too. And it goes like, it's a little bit smaller. It gets a little bigger. I'm not too nervous, but I'm kind of just right now in the process of like, let me get everything checked before we start bringing a baby into this. Like try
check
to get
everything out. Yes.
My body where it needs to be. Yeah, but it is wild.
It is like if you, I know that health insurance is like such a fucking tricky thing, but like if you're lucky enough to have it, I'm fully one of those people that's like, when I have insurance, I will be at the doctor's for everything. And again, and after saying like, sometimes it's hard to trust them and all this stuff, but like, I'm fully like, is that something? Let me check it out. Do I have a freckle on my back that looks like it's not a circle? Let me check it out. I'm fully like, when I have insurance, I'm like, get this shit done, you know, because you just don't know. And I think I went in and out of insurance when I had the lump. So it wasn't until like, I had it for like 4 years. And I finally, some guy was like, we have to take that out of you. I'm like, yeah, no, I get it. I would like it out because we had drained it. We had tested it and it just kept getting bigger. And it was just like, I was like, man, you know, but there's so lumps in your neck, definitely. Not scary. Like it was fine. It was totally like not scary, but like I was just, it just kept getting bigger. And I was like, I feel like this is not normal. Some people are just lumpy. I was like, okay, well, do their lumps usually grow exponentially within a year? I was like, please get it off my fucking neck. It's like crazy.
It's just New York, I guess, is so straightforward. Like I work remote. And so I have a lot of people, I'm like the only person that like lives in New York City. And so, I know I'm always like, oh, they think I'm bitchy because I'm just like, no, I'm just straightforward. Like, I'm just letting you know what's up. Though
I'm used to dealing with other New Yorkers.
And we're used to dealing with other New Yorkers like that, too. Like, I was like, ah, now it makes sense. We're just going to tell like it is. Some people are just lumpy, though. That's not the full answer.
Yeah.
Some people are still lumpy, but let's make sure this lump is just a normal lump and not something that we should be really worried about.
Yeah.
But, oh man, it's a fun journey. It's a not at all fun. It's a funny
getting
journey.
Getting older, finding lumps and bumps, finding good doctors. Because finding good doctors too is actually pretty like it's half the battle of like these things checked out by somebody who you can kind of decipher as a person underneath it all.
Yes, that's actually also what I'm worried about for OB, my OBGYN. I was like, well, how do I?
I have a great one.
Okay. Okay.
And they work with like a lot of different insurances to kind of basically, she's like, we submit, we see what they cover, and we generally like, we take what they cover. So like, and if your first two visits, it looks like it's going to be too much, we'll let you know. Mm-hmm. But they kind of try to work with people, with women. It's like a women's health thing. They do like all kinds of stuff there, but I really like her. She's scary as all get out. Like when she was like, your baby's coming out on the 10th. I was like, doesn't induction hurt? She's like, doesn't childbirth hurt? And I go, okay.
But see, I love female doctors like that, though.
Mm-hmm.
I had a neurologist. I had migraines for 6 months straight. Couldn't figure it out. Finally got a neurologist. The worst bedside manner I've ever seen in my life. Just awful. Mm. Like, legit, she was Russian. She was like, this is like, she's like, just crazy. I'd have to be like, you need to stop talking and slow down and then listen to my questions. But she got a solution and I no longer have migraines. So like, I like a scary woman. I like a woman that's like, I know what I'm doing and we're going to get through this.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. Yeah. I will definitely hit you up for that.
She's great. She's great. The whole practice is great. The other three in the practice are men, but They also have been kind of very, very gentle, but I like, they've been more gentle than her. She's kind of like, this is what's going on. So I get this, do this. When you start breastfeeding, put cabbage on your nipples. And I was like, great. She's like half old school, half just like, fucking, we're getting it done. She's also like, have some wine at this point. Baby's cooked. Like, you know, she's very like, listen, I don't care what you do. She's coming out April 10th. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Speaking of wine, have you been able to have sushi? I've been told sushi's okay.
So I didn't at first, and I've had it twice now in my like last like month, because somebody was like, yeah, all sushi is like flash frozen in New York. And it's, I mean, it's probably there are like, I think with all these things, you can read and see what is best for you. Like, I think at the beginning, my doctor told me not to have sushi. And once she said wine was okay, I'm like, I'm sure sushi's fine too. So, but I'm not like overdoing it. Like, I've had it like twice, you know.
Yeah.
I made sure that it was like good. I wasn't buying it from like the gas station or the supermarket, you know. But had sushi, had some deli meat, not from behind the counter, but like a pack that like you open yourself.
Okay.
And like I said, yeah, we went to France when we were for Christmas, and she was like, have a glass of wine in France. She's like, I mean, and I had some soft cheeses there. Yeah. And I do think like, also it's like when you go through so much to get pregnant, there's two sides. It's like you either like you're terrified something bad is going to happen, or you're kind of like, hey man, this is the baby that had just been floating around the universe waiting till I got my shit together. Like, she's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like halfway through my pregnancy adopted that philosophy. It was like, she's been here. She was waiting, and I'm not going to be an idiot. I'm not like doing drugs. I'm not doing like crazy shit, but like if I have a piece of sushi, I think she's okay. Like, she's, mm-hmm. you know, we're okay. Like, I tried not to be scary, because a lot of it is just a scare tactic, and it's made to make the woman feel miserable. And I was like, I don't want to feel miserable. This is a beautiful time. I mm-hmm. want to be happy, and I want to like, I don't want to be like nervous for everything. I want to go into this feeling confident and calm and comfortable. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there's always like a little bit of a fear because it took so long, but I don't want to act upon that fear and then have that be the way that I mother based on a fear. Like, I want to be confident, and I want to be empowered. And I also want to be like, hey man, lumps and bumps and scrapes and these things are going to happen, and you know, and you can't, I'm not going to do everything perfect, even if I tried to do everything by the book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, I can't be miserable. I need to be a person and not be miserable. So I've just been kind of adopting that, you know.
No, I love that. That's super healthy, and that's really how I hope it happens for me too. I had a few friends, like, I got really scared I got freaked out. I have a few friends that had some pretty rough pregnancies. And I was like, oof, I'm not sure. But like, and also talking to other people are just like, you know, sometimes it just is what it is, and you just go through it.
And everyone's different. And like, mm-hmm. There's no way you can look up what your pregnancy is going to look like, mm-hmm. or what is going to affect you, or how, like, they're all different. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's crazy. Like, that's also why I try not to get like too fucking crazy. Cause I'm like, nobody's going through what I'm going through, because this is my pregnancy and my baby who's doing whatever the fuck she's doing in there, moving, shaking,
mm-hmm.
swimming and doing all this shit, man, giving me heartburn. But like, yeah, they're not the same. They can't be. It's different people, different babies, different everything.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. It's super true. I love this read. Since I got to see the beginning, and now I'm getting to see the end. And honestly, like, you had such a great attitude about all of it that I think it bodes really well. And I think you're going to be an amazing mom.
Thank you. Watch you talk to me after she comes out, and I'm like, like, I'm a freak. I'm trying to set myself up for success. This is what I'm trying to do by trying to set these, not expectations, but trying to just be like, I just keep visioning that like things are going to be okay. You know, like, I know, like, I'm not an idiot. Like, I know it's going to be hard, but like, all these fucking people that'll be like, yeah, get ready to never sleep. Get ready to be knee deep in shit. It's like, hey, I know. Mm-hmm. But like, let me enjoy, this took me 5 years. Like, let me just enjoy it. Like, let me just process and do this on my own. without like all these negative things, like, you know, like I'm just like I'm like, because I'm envisioning and I'm visualizing that we're gonna be okay, because you have to be, you figure it out, because you have to keep something alive, you go, you go, you figure it the fuck out, you know. So I'm like, just let me go through it on my own, let me figure out how I am gonna manage all this on my own, you know. So that's what I'm just like focusing on, is being like as open to whatever happens. I hope to breastfeed. If I can't, I'm not going to fucking force it. I need to feed the baby. I want to have a vaginal delivery, but if they get in there and they're like, we have to cut her out, go do whatever you need to do. Like, do whatever you need to do. Like, I'm here for the ride. I have no expectations. I'm just going to, she'll come out. She's going to be who she is. And I'll deal with her then.
I fucking love this. Oh yeah, my God.
I can't wait to meet her though. I can't wait.
Oh, I'm like tearing up. I'm so excited for you. This is so great.
I'm excited April baby. For you trying. Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting. It's an exciting time when it all is like, when you start thinking about that part of life, you know?
Yeah. It's really, what I've told people is, for the longest time, like, I just, you know, I was always like, career comes first. And cause I was very hesitant, cause I had been a nanny and like really in it for so long. And you just see what it's like, how everything changes
a lot.
And then like you know, find your partner, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this could work. And I remember when we got married, I was like, cause I was like, I can definitely have a kid with you, but I'm very, very scared. And these are what my fears are. And then when we got married, I was like, I'm not scared anymore. Like, I'm not. And it's really cool to watch the process of going through it. So I just always tell people, go through the process. Like, if you want that, if that's like the path you want to take, you will get there if that's what you truly want. And you will be very accepting of it. If you aren't, then maybe you shouldn't. Like, if you don't want to do this, and like, maybe you shouldn't do this, and maybe it's not the right partnership or like relationship, but go from there. But it's like, I'm very neurotic, and to see the peace of mind come with it, that I was like, oh, okay, like this is something that I do want. And fingers crossed.
Good. Fingers crossed.
I'm hoping, I want to have like one last summer, so I'm like, I don't want to get pregnant right away. Give me like a month.
I got blackout and did ecstasy a month before my transfer. Like, I was like, I'm having my last night. I went to Fire Island and I fucking partied, and then I didn't drink for a month and did my transfer, because I was like, let me have one more night. Let me have one more. So I get it. Go have your, go do your stuff. Like, I did that for, go do your things. You know, make the decision, and then when it's time, you'll be like, all right, we can clean it up. And even sometimes in between there, you might still have a night where you're like, fuck it, you know, like, because it's a weird, but like, yes, I was fully on Fire Island, like, and then a month later was like, I'm gonna be a mom, you know. So we can be both things. It's okay.
And that's what I love about New York City too, is like, there really is like, you're all the things. And I will say this, and you probably have already been told this too, that actress that we were talking about, like, postpartum depression, she was like, she's like, a lot of my friends were having postpartum, but they'd all moved to Connecticut and I was still in New York. They were all like really alone. And she was like, anytime I was starting to feel really shitty, she was like, I would just take my baby and go to the playground. And because you're just surrounded by people, and it just changes everything.
Central Park, there's museums. Like, this is a town that is really builds an independence, I think. And I'm excited for that.
Yes. Like, I am so excited to like be on my day off and like go get a beer with my baby. Do you know what I mean? Like, cause there's just so many places you can just like sit outside with your stroller and have a baby.
Strap that thing to you and walk around. Like, I can't wait. I hope she likes the carrier, cause I imagine carrying her everywhere. Mm-hmm. And like, my niece right now doesn't, it's 5 months and she hates the carrier. And I'm like, I hope she likes the carrier, cause I just feel like I want to carry her. I'll just cruise the city. Yeah.
Oh, yay.
Get a beer. Get a White Claw. We'll get crazy. Mommy have some malt liquor. We'll go home. We'll take a nap together.
A little ecstasy. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So at the end of the episode, I do always ask people, is there anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about?
Girl, at your show the other day, I didn't even remember I had a scarf on. Like, I don't know what's going on in my brain. Like, I don't know. what's happening. So I really truly halfway through my set, I remember that I put on that little thing and was like, okay. So no, I don't know what happened. What my brain is so far gone right now. I think we're good.
We had a great talk. This was great.
We had a great time.
Thank you so much for coming on. And I can't wait to see you again and meet the baby one day.
I know. And of course, you know, if you have any questions when you start trying, like love talking. Or if anybody does, I'm so open with this. I love talking about it.
Oh yes, I will definitely hit you up because I have so many questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
do it.
Yeah, do it, like ask questions or have a baby.
Both.
Both. Do it both. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Please go follow Casey again at CaseFaceB, so CaseFaceB on all the socials. She's fucking hilarious. She's fucking insightful. I am so honored to have gotten to meet her and like through Fringe and just get to see this journey as well. And remember to rate, like, subscribe, review, share on all the socials. Follow us at Awkward Sex in the City. And also, I always forget this, we will be in Nashville. We'll be in Nashville on April 27th. I almost said August. April 27th at Third Coast Comedy. We're super excited. I have very good... feel very good energy for the show. And then that's kind of the end for this tour. We're going to take a break in May and we'll be back in June starting up again touring. So come see us perform. It's always a blast. It's always a good time. And yeah, come see my baby. Come see what was at Fringe every day because the people I tour with were at Fringe as well with me. So it's a blast. You'll have a great fucking time. And I will talk to y'all in 2 weeks. Bye.